Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. We are live on The Biz at 8:80 a.m. You can listen online or download the app at 880thebiz.com. Again, that's 880thebiz.com. You can listen on iHeartRadio through Alexa by saying, Alexa, play 880 The Biz. Later, the show will be available on podcasts as well. Make sure to stay tuned. Later on, we will open up the lines to take callers, and you can call in with questions or personal stories that you might want to share. We started this show because I intended this to be a platform for survivors of abuse or anyone suffering so that we can be of comfort to each other. We can learn from one another, providing an open dialogue and learning different ways of helping each other. This show will periodically provide testimonials and advice from professionals in the field. We are all successful. It's a successful story because all that's happened is in the past. Being here and now means we have many more chances to rewrite history and even harmonize our lives. We can empower one another by letting go, by providing transparency, reaching closer to the end of our recovery, which ultimately is acceptance. We learn to redefine our thoughts in positive ways when we turn to prayer. Then everything does fall into place and we open our eyes, eventually replacing negative coping mechanisms with healthy ones. And this is always a solution if you believe, if you seek God. Because for me, love was the answer to all my problems. But ultimately, God was my only cure. Today, I'm joined by Boris Nikolov. Hi, Boris.
Hi.
And I also am excited to say that we have a very special guest today. Her name is Anne Bischoff. She's a psychologist. And let me tell you something, a little something about Anne Bischoff. She's a licensed clinical psychologist, a PhD, who specializes in family issues and issues related to divorce, parenting, parenting planning, and co-parenting counseling. She is passionate about helping parents divorce respectfully so that the entire family can heal and thrive. Dr. Bush's experience and training in working with families where divorce is current or past has taught her to focus on helping parents develop parenting plans which support the health and well-being of all family members. She has a depth and breadth of professional and personal experience in nesting, co-parenting, step-parenting, and single parenting issues. During the 2008 recession, Dr. Bischoff and a colleague developed a nesting protocol for parents who could not afford to separate or divorce. They presented this protocol at statewide conferences for attorneys, mental health professionals, and divorce financial professionals. She is currently writing a book about this topic. She blogs regularly on psychologytoday.com and on divorcemag.com. In 2013, Dr. Bischoff was honored with the Collaborate Practice California Eureka Award, which recognizes those who have made significant contributions to collaborate practices in California. She served as vice president on the board of directors for Collaborative Practice California and on several state committees, including co-chairing the Practice Excellence Committee. Dr. Bischoff has presented widely on collaborative divorce, forgiveness practices, and consensual dispute resolution topics to statewide, international, and local mental and service organizations conferences, including the annual California Psychological Association and California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists conferences at the annual state conference of CPCAL and the annual conference of International Academy of Collaborative Professionals. Wow, she is really accomplished. Dr. Bischoff is also a co-founder of a residential treatment program for traumatized emergency responders. Nice. And their families, where she volunteers regularly. A graduate of Stanford University and the California Graduate School of Psychology, she has raised 6 children and lives in San Rafael, California. Today, let me introduce to you guys Dr. Ann Bushow. Hello, doctor.
That sounds pretty amazing when you say that about me, but it's all true.
And thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for being here, doctor. It's really important to have a professional like you on the show because a lot of people benefit from therapy. And it's wonderful that so many people are coming together and helping each other. Thank you again. So tell us a little bit about what it is that I know that I did describe a lot of what you do, but I just wanted to tell you a little bit about my story. I know that I can relate, and to tell you the truth, I really wish you would have been around, let's say, maybe how many years ago when Daniel, who's now 25, was a year old?
24.
Yes. Well, that was the never ending, no resolution, custody battle that lasted 14 years. And then again, when she was 16, and then again, when he wanted to name her incapacitated. And it's incredible because through all that time, guess who paid the price? The child.
Mm-hmm.
The child paid the price. And I always try to protect her throughout these custody battles that were 3 to 4 times a year. And I always try to protect her by putting her in therapy once a week so that these things would not become damaging emotional to her.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really important for me. But
yeah,
it was difficult because
it sounds like a hard time.
I would see how it affected her. I would see how sad she was. And the thing that he always said when he took me to court, there's really no evidence. It's your word against his. But he came in with documenting lies, claiming parental alienation. And the problem is back then, the child was always too young to speak for herself. Have you had any experiences like this?
I have. And in fact, the way that I found myself in working in the collaborative divorce field was that when I was working with these kinds of high conflict divorces, I was going home with the worst stomach ache every day. And I mean, they were literally making me sick. And so when I heard about collaborative divorce and the practice group in our area was bringing in mental health professionals for the first time, I kind of jumped at that opportunity. And in recent years, I haven't worked with high conflict divorces anymore, mostly because of how it affects me. It's so painful. I'd rather put my time and energy into helping people divorce in a way that's less harmful. Just by the way, you know, the parental alienation term is really changing because I think people recognize that it's not parents turning their children against each other necessarily. And so we call it now refuse or resist. When a child refuses or resists going to the other parent, that's more about the child and less about blaming the other parent, which I think probably reduces the animosity between the parents. It's another example of using less adversarial language.
Well, here's my theory. If you try to poison a child against her other parent, the child loves both parents no matter what. In the child's eyes, the parent can do no wrong. I know this personally.
That's right.
The parents are both good no matter what. So the parent who's trying to alienate the child, they're trying to poison that child is going to resent that parent for saying these mean things about daddy or for saying these mean things about mommy. So there's really no point. Why would anybody try to do that? And I remember my daughter crying and screaming, "Mom, I don't want to go there." But I would have to force her because that's the very same thing he's accusing me of not doing.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's when children are refusing or resisting to go, what they need also is they need to recognize that they have a part of each parent in them. I mean, on some intuitive level, I think children know that they're made up of both mommy and daddy. And so if they turn against one parent, they're really turning against a part of themselves. And, you know, this can have a long-term impact. And, you know, hopefully in therapy, kids can work out that conflict within themselves. But it's important for kids to be able to accept both parents with all their limitations. I mean, assuming that the parents aren't violent or, you know, abusive in some way, that kids need to be able to internalize and accept the parts of each parent that they love.
Right. It's true. I mean, for me, it was difficult because I would see how my daughter was sometimes used as a pawn. And it's so important to have people like you in this world, really. You're so needed. Because if these things are not taken care of, it's not just the custody battles. It follows you throughout life. Even when my daughter was attacked and almost killed, and I nursed her back to health when she got out of the hospital, and she was with us for 2.5 years, and it was a lovely taking care of her and being with her. We had such a great relationship. And because the animosity still existed when I wrote my memoir, now he's playing his games again. And now this same daughter moved away. She's now staying in one of the houses that he rents, and she's talking like him and talking like my mother because he talks to my mother. And unfortunately, it has to be parents that you can work with, parents that are willing to change for the better for the sake of their child.
That's absolutely true. In my experience in divorce, most parents love their children, even if they've grown to hate the partner. And when there's physical abuse, it's raised to a whole nother level where, you know, issues of safety come up, and particularly with young children. I'm sorry that you had such a difficult time. It sounds really painful.
Well, no one's exempt to suffering, so it's okay. I saw a terrible story today on Facebook, and boy, it really puts things into perspective. Yes. It's totally okay, because it helps me to understand someone else, that if they're going through this, that if they're going through custody battles, I can give them advice, something I didn't know. Yeah. It's important to journalize. Once my attorney told me that my daughter was not the best historian, keep an open eye. Know that the child might want to be trying to please one parent and trying to please the other parent. You look at things from all angles. There's things that I could now tell people that I would not have known otherwise. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But thank you.
You know, there's another interesting piece about the impact of the conflict on children, which is that most parents will try to protect the children from the conflict. In other words, they won't have the arguments when the child is present, and hopefully avoid the arguments, you know, at the door when there's a transfer happening. But even if you do a tremendous job of protecting your child from the conflict, the children pick up on it through you by the way you hold them. If you've just had an argument with your ex, you're going to hug your child differently than when you're feeling at peace. And children are sponges, so they can pick up on the stress and conflict, even if you're doing the best possible job trying to protect them. This is why, in my opinion, trying to reduce the conflict between the parents is the most important task of the divorce and post-divorce, because it does have such an effect on the children. I think it helps when parents turn to other adults for support. It doesn't have to be a therapist, but if they have friends that they can talk to, if they have confidants, it's just so important to be able to have some place to take to be able to vent or to take your concerns or worries or fears to another adult, so that you don't bring them to the children when you hug them, even if you're not talking about them.
Right, because I'm sure that my daughter must have picked up on the many times that I was depressed, because to me, I was pretty much alone. I was an orphan in the world, and this is the only thing I had was my daughter. She was my world. I did not believe in abortion, and I felt like I was going to lose her to somebody who was abusive, and therefore, yeah. I would not even have the opportunity to protect her, and that was killing
yeah.
me. It was... And, I mean, yes, you do need support system. Thank God I had my friends. And hopefully yeah. others, they have family. Anyhow, for those who are just joining us, this is just a quick reminder. We are going to be opening up our lines. When we return, our number is 305-541-2350. Again, that's 305-541-2350. You can listen to The Cure every Friday at 2 p.m. on 880 The Biz.
Breakfast at Tiffany's and bottles of bubbles. Girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble. Lashes and diamonds, ATM machines. Buy myself all of my favorite things. Been through some bad, I should be a savage. Who would've thought it turned me to a savage? Rather be tied up with calls and my strings. Write my own checks like I write what I sing. Yeah. You like my hair? Gee, thanks, just bought it. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it. Yeah, I want it, I got it, I want it, I got it. I want it, I got it, I want it, I got it. You like my hair? Gee, thanks, just bought it. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it. Yeah, wearing no ring, but ain't gon' meet no misses. But matching diamonds for 6 of my... I'd rather spoil all my friends with my riches. Think we tell therapy my new addiction. Whoever said money can't solve your problems must not have had enough money to solve them. They say which one, I say nah, I want all them. Happiness is the same price as red bottoms. My smile is beaming, my skin is gleaming. The way it shine, I know you've seen it. If it ain't money, the wrong number. Black card is my business card. The way it be setting the tone for me. I don't be brave, but I be like, put it in the bag, yeah. When you see the max, they stacked up like my, yeah. Shoot, go from the store to the booth. Make it all back in one loop. Give me the loot. Never mind, I got a juice. Nothing but never we shoot. Look at my neck, look at my neck. Ain't got enough money to pay me respect. Ain't no budget when I'm on the set. If I like it, then that's what I get, yeah.
I want it, I got it.
Can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back to the show. For those that are just tuning in, this is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo, on 880 AM The Biz. Today, we're talking about how to change the adversarial language of separation and divorce. Our special guest is Dr. Ann Bushell, and I'm also joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov.
Hello.
I believe you had some questions.
Yeah. Hi.
Okay, Dr. Bosho. I was reading your website, and this is really interesting what you're doing. So this is like a combination between therapy and coaching, I guess.
I call it coaching. I think coaching is a much more accessible word to people.
Okay.
And it is very different from therapy. One way to think about it is that a therapist helps you unpack your bags and decide what you want to keep and what you want to throw away. And a coach just helps you carry your bags from here to there, from the beginning of the divorce to the end of the divorce. So that's one way to think of the difference between the two of them. My role as a divorce coach is to help prepare people for meetings, to help people be able to articulate what's important to them, to know where there's some give, to know what might trigger them, and have some skills to calm down if they need it in meetings, that sort of thing. That's what I do in coaching.
Nice. Don't we all need that?
Yeah. And how about the kids? Are they part of that process or just the parents?
It's a good question. In the collaborative process, we want to think of the whole family, and we include the children in that. And so there is often another clinician on the team who's called a child specialist, and that person is always a licensed mental health person, but they're, again, not doing therapy. Their role is to meet with the children maybe one time, maybe up to three times, but to bring the voice of the children to the table. So nice. That, and also to reassure the children, I think, that their parents are in good hands and that they'll be well taken care of. But we want the children's voice to be heard. And so as a coach, I'll often take the child specialist's report and help the parents digest it, process it, if the children are asking for something in particular or perhaps complaining about something in particular. As a coach, I'll try to help the parents understand that.
Right.
And it's very often things that children really don't want to say directly to their parents, but they understand that it's not a confidential process like therapy, that what they say at the discretion of the child specialist will be shared.
Wow, why don't they use you for divorces? Yeah. I mean, remember mediation for us?
Yeah,
those wonderful mediators, how far we got?
That's a totally interesting concept that you do. It seems like really, really productive because, yes, I was the supportive system of Amy, so I went through her custody battles, let's say, for many years, and I'm her husband. So...
Mm-hmm.
We went through mediation.
He said that with happiness.
Yeah. That was happiness. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see the smile on his face.
Okay. I wasn't very happy when we went to mediation because I got to tell you, we spent thousands of dollars for something that was totally not productive. And then the whole system to me is like really weirdly broken, and what you are doing seems like a very bright light into that.
Well, she's prioritizing and putting things into perspective.
Yeah,
that's important.
Mediation isn't a good choice for people when there's violence or when there isn't a level playing field. If one person is more emotional than the other, or if there's, you know, zero respect. Mediation calls for some respect between the spouses that are divorcing. Collaborative divorce really evolved out of that need that mediation wasn't quite enough for people, but most people don't want to go to court. And so the collaborative process, the parents or the spouses agree up front that they will not go to court. And if they decide to litigate, then the professionals that they're working with collaboratively will withdraw. So it's an incentive for people not to threaten court, you know, not to do the, well, I'll see you in court thing. And it helps people stay through the negotiation process even when the going gets tough. That's what I like about the collaborative process is
that they get more
support than you get in mediation, but it's not litigation. It's still non-adversarial process.
I mean, nice. So is that like something new that is just happening? Because I honestly haven't heard for him. Maybe don't publicize it or the attorneys don't like it?
It's actually not new. It started in the mid-90s. It was started by a man named Stu Webb in Minnesota. And I know that there are collaborative practice groups in Massachusetts. You're in Massachusetts, right?
We're in Miami.
You're in Miami. Okay. Actually, there's a very excellent collaborative practice organization in the state of Miami. And the state actually really supports the collaborative practitioners. So if you look online, I'm sure you can find out more information about it. It's not new, but what it is, people are concerned about the cost, and it is more costly than mediation generally.
It is, really? Because I'm going to tell you, we spent more than $65,000 for many years in our litigation.
Mediating. Yeah.
So I wish you had been able to do it in a collaborative model. Yeah. Because
me too.
Just the amount of money that you spent tells me that mediation wasn't the right forum for the two of you to work out your disagreements. So, yeah, that sounds terrible. And that's exactly why the collaborative process exists, is to pull people like you in who don't want to litigate and do want to try to resolve the problems through mutual agreement somehow. But mediation just doesn't provide enough support.
Right. Okay. And how about the attorneys? Do you feel like the attorneys are opposing your practice because they're not, using so much fees?
They should find it beneficial. I mean, because it's their own private practice. They're not tied to the courts in any way. That helps.
So there are always attorneys in this collaborative process. Each client will have an attorney.
Okay.
A lot of the attorneys that I work with, they call themselves, litigators in recovery because they don't want to go to court anymore and they choose to work in mediation or collaboration exclusively.
Nice.
And the attorneys that choose to work in this model, they usually feel that what they do best at their fee they can do, but what they're not necessarily very good at is psychology.
Right.
And so by bringing something, if you call your lawyer to vent about your ex or the person you're trying to divorce, the lawyer isn't necessarily the right person to talk to about your anger, right? Your anger or your fear.
Right.
So the attorneys in the collaborative model really are very welcoming to having specialists. It's kind of like subcontractors on the team working with clients. Now, litigating attorneys, sometimes litigating attorneys refer people to us. And there are, truthfully, some litigating attorneys that don't support the collaborative model. And I don't know, I think they have many reasons why that might be.
Okay. That's super interesting.
When mediation first started, the attorneys didn't like that either. So, it may just take time to come into the mainstream.
Right. Good. I hope it does because, mediation is just another waste of time and then you go back to the same place. And what is your opinion on involving psychologists in the process of the courts early on? Like, for example...
I'd like to know when does the child get a voice?
Exactly. That's kind of... Yeah. So we can be determined early on, not the judge's perspective or, one of the parents' perspective, but I don't know, maybe a professional that can be really involved into the system.
Even sometimes a child doesn't even know because the child is so confused.
Right.
It'd be great if the child could have an advocate.
Right.
Somebody who's neutral.
I think it varies by jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. I live in Northern California, and I do think the courts are interested in the child's voice. The child will not go to court, but it's good to have a mental health person be able to convey the child's voice. Yeah.
Right, because they have this guardians ad litem who are attorneys or other people that are volunteering to you know, represent a child, but they spent, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours with the child, 3 or 4 hours with the parents, and then suddenly they come up with an idea what's best for the child?
Do they have guardian ad litem for divorce cases?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
You know, in the old days, when, for example, when my husband's parents divorced, they would take the children into court and ask the children to choose which parent they wanted to be with.
Oh, that's so tough. That, no.
It was terrible. It's traumatizing to children.
Yeah.
I do believe that the children should have a voice, not a vote. And in the collaborative model, we want the children to have their interests at the table. And in my practice, there have been several cases where I've actually met with adult children. So even though it's not about custody, the adult children may have concerns that parents are not being fair to one another, or that, you know, they're not being well taken care of by their professionals,
right,
and or that, you know, that the conflict will continue. Even though they're adults, having a meeting with somebody like me as a child specialist can alleviate a lot of those fears and make it easier for the parents then to finish the divorce.
That is so smart, because you take a holistic approach. You include the whole family, which is what's going on. And today, somebody realizes they need help and they go get therapy, and great, they're doing better and they're trying to fix their life and their behavior. But everyone else, the environment is still what it is. So it's important to approach it in a holistic way to make sure that everyone who's influencing this person's life, that everyone's in the same in the same table, that they're all understanding what's important and respecting one another, and, you know, just treating the way that people should treat one another. I feel like we've lost, a lot of us have lost our values, and we've forgotten what it's like to love unconditionally and to be forgiving and to understand that we're human and no one's perfect and we can make mistakes. And it's okay if the person's not like you. And it's okay if somebody else has flaws, so do you. So if we can just learn to be more forgiving, more accepting, and love no matter what, I mean, we'd get along so much better. There wouldn't be so many custody battles.
Yeah, yeah. It seems, you know, I think you saw the piece that I wrote in Psychology Today about changing the adversarial language. And it's words like custody that bother me, because custody is what you do when police take someone into custody and put them in jail.
Well, you don't own a child.
That's right. That's right. And there's so much language that we use every single day when we talk about divorce that is adversarial. And if we could change the language, it does change the way we think and the way we behave.
It's
so,
like,
you know, that's my hope.
It's cool. It's almost like seeing the cup half empty or seeing the cup half full.
Right.
And it's how we choose. Yeah. It's what we choose to see it. But some of us, we need guidance. And some of us, we need education. And some of us, we need encouragement. That we will continue to talk about these amazing things with our wonderful guest. And for those that are tuning in, this is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Remember, our lines are open if you'd like to call and speak to the psychologist, or if you'd like to share your story. Our number is 305-541-2350. Again, that's 305-541-2350. You can listen to us every Friday at 2 p.m. This is Bury a Friend by Ellie Bellish.
What do you want from me? Why don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
Come here.
Say it, spit it out. What is it exactly? Your pain is the amount cleaning you out. Am I satisfactory? Today I'm thinking about things that are deadly. The way I'm drinking you down, like I wanna drown, like I wanna end me. Step on the glass, staple your tongue. Bury a friend, try to wake up. Cannibal
don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
Listen.
Keep you in the dark. What had you expected? Me to make you my art and make you a star and get you connected. I'll meet you in the park. I'll be calm and collected. But we knew right from the start that you'd fall apart, cause I'm too expensive. Your talk would be something that shouldn't be said out loud. Honestly, I thought that I would be dead by now. Calling security, keeping my head held down. Bury the hatchet or bury your friend right now. The debt that I owe, gotta sell my soul. Cause I can't say no, no, I can't say no. Then my limbs are frozen, my eyes won't close. And I can't say no, I can't say no.
Careful.
Step on the glass, staple your tongue. Bury a friend, try to wake up. Cannibal class, killing the sun. Bury a friend. I wanna end me.
Life can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
We are back, and thanks for joining us. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. We're on 880 AM, The Biz. We're talking about separation and divorce and how to make them more amicable. And today we have a special guest, Ann Bushell. We're also joined by Dr. Boris Nicolau. Doctor, this is for you, Dr. Ann Bushell. The song that just played, it's kind of interesting. The song just came out, and I was thinking about this myself, because what bothered me most about my daughter's father and I, we were never married, but it was a separation. We did have a child in common. And what bothered me most about the divorce is how I saw that it affected my daughter, how afraid she was to go over there, how she felt very pressured. And I thought to myself, what are the cases, how important it is to be amicable and to do this in an amicable way. People have no idea how it can affect a child. I mean, and it even can bring a child to suicide. It can make a child very depressed. It's not just a problem of the parents. And I wanted to talk more about that, Doctor, how we can change the language and the point of view from being very angry and having animosity towards one another to having understanding and compromise.
Yeah. I think that the first and maybe most important key is for no matter how you feel about the person that you're leaving or separating from or being divorced from, that no matter how you feel about that person, you set those feelings aside and both focus on the children. If you can do that, then you're already off to a pretty good start. If you can prioritize your children's well-being and set your own emotions aside. I mean, the research says that if you can do that, that after a period of adjustment, the children, which could be a year or two, that children can have, just the same measures of success in life as kids from intact families, meaning they do just as well in school, they have good relationships with friends, they are mentally healthy. Those are, measures of success that come when you're successful at protecting children from the conflict. It's hard, and especially when the conflict is intense, it's hard. But if you get the support that you need, I think most of the time people can do that. People will focus on their children and try to just let go of the conflict, because you'll never, unfortunately, the conflict never really helps.
I think it's innate in every parent to put their child first, and I think you just have to remind them of that. Because
that's
sometimes anger can get in the way and just blind us. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And almost all parents will say they love their children and they want to do what's best for the children. I mean, I've never had a parent tell me they didn't want to do that. Then it's a question of, you know, what I call coaching or education, of helping the parents understand how it is that at that child's particular age, at that child's particular development, and that child's particular temperament and situation in the family, that how they can best work as parents post-separation, how they can co-parent successfully. Now, co-parent, that doesn't mean that they're going to have a lot of contact necessarily in a situation like yours and others. It might be more like parallel parenting, but it's an agreement to parallel parent, which protects the children from the conflict. The goal is to do whatever it takes to protect the kids from the conflict. That's the highest priority.
And it should be. I mean, our exchange was at the police station because he said I was too dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, projection kind of. What can you do? Yeah, I mean, I believe if the parents get along, the child would definitely be a more well-rounded human being and would understand how to be a better parent themselves, because having a successful marriage in life isn't always guaranteed. And it's learning how to best react to circumstances that we deal with in life. But how would someone be able to get in touch with you, maybe read your blogs and read some of your articles, your information? I'm sure there's lots of people out there that are in a bad predicament. Actually, I ran into somebody not too long ago that is going through a custody battle, and it's happening more often than should, really.
That's right. I'd be happy to, you know, give you my website address, and people can search for my writing on Psychology Today or DivorceMag.com. I wrote one particularly for men on Fatherly.com, which is a website, I don't know if you're familiar with it, for men going through divorce.
Nice.
And so they can search under my name, I suppose, on those websites.
Nice.
Okay, there was a question here that showed up in our Facebook account. Dr. Bourgeois, there is a Susanna here asking, what is your opinion if the custody battle or the divorce, it's very, very prolonged for years? When is the time for a psychologist to step in and actually say, okay, that's enough. I'm strongly suggesting that something happens.
Well,
intervention is needed, basically.
Something like that. I mean,
yeah. If the child or a parent is in therapy, because it's a confidential relationship and it's treatment oriented, if that therapist feels that someone else needs to step in more into the legal proceedings, then that would have to be a referral to someone else. The child's therapist couldn't do it. It would be stepping outside of her role and limitation of her role. So if nobody's in therapy, then one hopes that the school psychologist or someone through the church or temple, that someone else would notice. The pediatrician is also another, sometimes a point of entry, or teachers. If they notice that a child is not performing well or is regressing or seems either to have behavioral problems or seems completely withdrawn, and these are not typical behaviors for children, then that person can start a process of trying to make a referral.
Okay.
Sometimes the courts will sometimes order a custody evaluation, but my experience, at least here, is that that's less and less common, mostly because they're so expensive and they take so long. And if there's any other way to reach an agreement without going through a custody evaluation, it would be very preferable.
Well, hopefully you don't have a dysfunctional family and you have all parties agreeing to cooperate and our party's willing to do the right thing. But for someone like me, I don't think I tried everything. Nothing did work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so yeah. my only solution was prayer and hope for the best. And believe it or not, I got depressed for no reason. I yeah. suffered for no reason. Yeah. I worried for no reason. Because in the end, she always stayed with me. And right. everything turned yeah. out okay.
Yeah. And then I yeah. think we need to say special thanks to a very special person, Jay Levy Esquire.
Oh, yes. God is kind. Mm-hmm. He's very sweet. Because sometimes mm-hmm. you really have no one in life. No family, nobody. And your friends can't do anything for you. Forget it. They're just as poor as you. So, long story short, it's in my book. By the grace of God, Jay Levy, he represented me pro bono. For many years, I had gone through 7 or 8 years of custody battles before I met Boris, before I finally got married for the first time. Mm-hmm. So, believe it or not, he was like my guardian angel. I didn't have family, yeah. but wow, I had him. And at least I had the security blanket of knowing that even though he didn't go to court to attack him, he was with that one attorney that could stand up to his very mean, lying, conniving attorney. My goodness, mm-hmm. he would mm-hmm. eat every other attorney alive in court, but not this man. This man was like an angel. He couldn't step on his little pinky, and yeah. he made sure Danielle stayed safe, and for that I will forever be grateful.
Yep. Well, I think one of the points that you're alluding to is how important it is for people to have professionals working on their behalf that they yep. trust. Yes. And feel comfortable with and feel or qualified. In some high conflict divorces, people spend a lot of money while the attorneys are fighting with each other.
Yeah.
And so in a situation where attorneys actually know each other and have worked together on cases in the past where they have been able to come to agreements, those cases usually go more smoothly because the attorneys aren't going to spend your money duking it out with each other.
Well, my case was really, really bad. And you know what yeah. was the pivotal point in my case? I had to recuse the general master, but after that, they were still going to take my daughter away. And the pivotal point in my case was when the psychiatrist, Dr. Evelyn Lopez Brunoni, who actually was picked out by my daughter's father, and she came in, who had interviewed us all, and she was to testify who the child would be with. And I remember her saying, well, with the father, there's a lot of structure. There's structure. Sure, he's strict. There's structure. But the mother, there's nurture. And then that's when the judge asked, what's more important? Thank God she stayed with me.
Yeah.
And, but yeah. I it just happened to be so that way that I did have a professional until she said that in court. Then she was no longer in our case because, you know, the father didn't like the response. But it's important to have a professional and somebody that can advocate, because it comes to a point that the attorneys are fighting and the parents are fighting and the child is too young and the judge doesn't know which way to go or who to believe. And what happens? A lot of years of unnecessary suffering for everyone.
Yeah. Sounds like your situation was so painful and so difficult. But what I want to say also is that it sounds like it was unavoidable, your situation, because of who you were separating from. But
thank you.
In my experience, and I think there's some statistics to back this up, only about less than 4% of divorce cases actually go to trial, go through the process that you had to go through. That
wow, I feel so blessed.
Yeah, it's sad, actually, that you had to go through it, and I hope that it made you stronger for it, and your daughter also.
Well, hey, I look at the glass half full. I'm proud of the fact that I'm more understanding.
Yeah,
because when you think about 96% of divorces, people don't love each other anymore. Sometimes they hate each other. Sometimes they can't stop fighting. But still, 96% of divorces end up settling sometimes on the courthouse step. but they do end up settling without going to trial. And what you went through is the, you know, most painful way to go through a divorce. And it sounds like, you know, that was your only option. And sometimes it is the only option. You do need to have another decision maker outside of the family.
Well, it was a great option, because I'll tell you, I've received no better therapy than what I've received from God. And the guys, as interesting as this has been, believe it or not, we've come to the end of the show again. And it's been wonderful having you, Doctor. And Boris, thank you for your very interesting questions. And I want to let you guys know that next week, I'm going to start announcing who we're going to have next week. And as the show continues, we're going to have more ideas and more professionals coming on the show, because we don't know what somebody may be suffering from, what might be their scenario, or what might they need to be able to help themselves. So this is why we're announcing them. Next week, we'll have Sandra Jeffs. She's an author, editor, speaker, and a feng shui master. That means a theta healer. What is that? Theta healer. I looked it up. It is a process of meditation that teaches people to develop natural intuition by changing their brainwave cycle to the more relaxed theta wave. I guess that's a relaxed state, right?
It is.
Okay.
EEG.
Anyhow, thank you guys so much for having being on my show. And I hope that I'll talk to you guys again. I'll be on here again next week, guys. This is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabell. You've been listening to 880 AM The Biz. Remember, you can download the app by going to www.880thebiz.com. That's the website. The app is 880 The Biz. And joining us again next Friday, remember, this is The Last Hurrah by Bebe Rexha.
I'm done with the drinking, I'm done with the smoking, I'm done with the playing, I'm done with the joking, I'm done with the ladies, I'm done with the fellas, just saying. Farewell tequila, so long margarita, lady sativa, I hate to leave ya, don't want the pressure, I don't need a lecture, no thank you honey, God bless ya. I know, I've said it all before, but it won't hurt to do it all once more. This is my last hurrah. Once I start, I ain't gonna stop till I go too far. Last hurrah, and it's okay. Maybe tomorrow I won't feel this pain. Last hurrah. Last hurrah. I'm done with the heartache, I'm done with the demons. Can't wait to be normal right after this weekend. I'm done with the drama, I'm fixing my karma. One more night up your nirvana. I know I've said it all before, but it won't hurt to do it all once more. This is my last hurrah.
Life can bring many difficult situations: domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com. or buying her book on Amazon.com.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.